everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 178. This is a show about all things Linux, whether it be hardware news, software news, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. And by we, I mean, of course mean myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop. And as always, I'm here with my good friend, the door-to-door geek, a.k.a. the Linux maven, Stephen McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Cody. Going pretty good, I'll say. Busy. It's better to be busy than not, my logic.
Definitely.
So I will just take the punches and just keep moving forward.
There you go. Yep, same thing, busy. Been having some issues with my new PC I built. I have some new parts on the way to hopefully... I hope it's a cooling issue that can be easily solved with a little bit of elbow, a.k.a. better thermal grease, and a new fan on my heatsink. But I ordered an SSD and some new RAM, so as fast as it was, it's going to be even faster. Running all cylinders in about 7 to 10 days, hopefully by next week. And I'm very excited. But in the meantime, I dusted off an old laptop, working great, through OpenSUSE 13.1 on it. That's my main podcasting rig now. That's an update in my world. And yeah, that's what's been happening.
Very cool, very cool. Yeah, I will say OpenSUSE, it's one of those distros, doesn't get talked about enough. I'm kind of shocked at the level of polish they've been able to quietly pull off.
I really dig it, man. Really easy to install most software on it. Haven't ran into any big issues of something I couldn't solve through either their website. They have a great sort of a software resource directly at the main page. And between that and going to the command line, getting some necessary programs that I use day-to-day, it's been cake. I'm running the GNOME 3 version. It works great. Got Kupfer on it. Yeah, it was super easy to install Steam on, runs all the games I need, but just, yeah, working really well.
Very cool.
Awesome. So, right off the bat, in case you haven't heard us speak about this lately, we, and by we, I mean myself and Dor and several other Podnutsians, are going to be making the trek up to Bellingham, Washington, the weekend of April 25th and 26th to attend the Linux Fest Northwest. We are really, really looking forward to it. Even though I live up here in Oregon, right near Washington, I have yet to attend the fest. Martin Obando, the host of Geeksters, has been there a few years, and he says it's great. I hear a lot of good things from the community, and this is the first time Dor will be attending a West Coast conference. Dor, are you excited?
No. I never get excited for anything because you never know what's going to happen between now and then. The closer it gets, you know. Good stuff, but I don't like flying, so combination nervousness because I gotta fly, but happiness that the other end of the flight I'm gonna hang out with a whole bunch of good people.
He's excited, he just doesn't want to admit it. And the key
the wife gets mad at me. I do know there's nothing to get excited about because it's 3 weeks away. A lot can happen between now and 3 weeks. I could die about 30 billion different times. I'll get excited when it's on its way, actually. And I'm like hours away from being there.
Your pessimism is severely outweighed by my optimism.
Oh.
I will see you on the 24th, and you're going to have an ear grin to grin. And by the way, when I hear one of the best things you do, well, two things to make you not nervous on a flight. One of them, of course, you should recognize advice from the my favorite Christmas film of all time, the 1987 action epic Die Hard. Yes, it does count. You take off your shoes and socks and you curl your toes.
No.
And it takes the stress away. It might make some of your fellow passengers nervous.
Exactly.
And or scared, exactly. But all you have to do is just not care what other people think about you and you'll be fine. Or number two, you just get loaded.
No.
Yeah. You can do either one of those. It's completely up to you. Or you can just stress the whole flight, but know that if you're going to stress the whole flight, that you didn't take my advice, and it's your fault.
Number one, I cannot get that loaded. I have to stop off in Chicago for an hour. If I get loaded, I'm not going to find my connecting flight. World of trouble, hurt, mental anguish, distress, anxiety, despair, heartache, headache. No, not going to do that. Two, I'm not taking my shoes off. Anytime someone takes their shoes off on a flight, I literally want to knock their nose into the back of their head. What's wrong with you?
But they're not going to do it, because then the air marshal's going to tackle them.
Well, you know.
Quite frankly, you could expose someone with a short fuse that may cause a bigger problem later in the flight anyway. You'd be doing the entire cabin a favor.
Oh, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
I know, yeah, and you're welcome. So anyway, to 24th, Dora will be touching down over here on the West Coast. We'll pick him up. We're going to go get some awesome food at a yeah, so if you guys live in near Portland, Oregon, or I guess Hillsboro, I think it's in Hillsboro, the Gyro House, let us know what you think, because we're going to go, we're going to eat there, and we're just going to have a good time. But yeah, if you can make it up to Bellingham, April 25th to 26th, please do so. There is a free attendance package. You don't need to pay anything to get in. However, they do have supporter packages if you want to help the festival, because obviously there are costs involved. But for more information, please go to linuxfestnorthwest.org. And if you want to see a list of the now confirmed, the current list of confirmed talks, accepted talks for it, you can also find a link there on the main page. And we look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, very cool. The last thing I'll add is that we are paying for this because we are fiscally responsible adults, at least to some degree. I will say, I highly encourage people, even if you can only make it there Saturday, even if hypothetically you're in Seattle, you have to work Friday and you're not going to be able to leave until late night and get there late night Friday, early Saturday, like another friend of the network, Steve's here. Thank you very much. Do it. Because I can guarantee you right now it's going to be well worth it. I will say, if you've been monitoring their website, their talks have drastically changed. And by drastically, I mean completely changed in the last week, 2 weeks. But there's still plenty of really good-looking talks there. I really can't encourage people enough. Come out. I will say, you're going to see at least 10-plus people from the Podnuts Network. Do not hesitate to approach anybody at any time. Say hi, and we can definitely hang out, get a meal, talk BS, sit down on some talks, have fun. It's going to be really one of those weekends that you're going to treasure and just wait for again to come next year.
Hear, hear. Yeah. Yeah. If you can make it out. Yeah. And Saturday is kind of like the main day. Even if you can't attend all day, that seems to be the day with the meat of the talks, as it were. Sunday's kind of a half day. If you can make it Friday night into Saturday into Sunday, fantastic. If you can't make it at all, we are going to attempt, and I say attempt, with the best of intentions, to record some special content and hopefully upload it while we're there, if not shortly after we return home. So if you can't make it out, we completely understand, but as always, we would urge you to reach out to your local user groups and find a fest near you and at least attend one sometime, because they are amazing as far as not only connecting with your local community, but just overall being able to pose questions that you may not have been able to pose online and get help in person from someone who is there to help. You'd be amazed at the kind of relationships that you can build at these things. I made some really good friends, got some really good professional contacts there. Overall, it's just a win-win-win-win-win.
Yeah, and I'll say the easiest way to keep track of all content being generated from this fest is if you go to twitter.com/podnuts. We are going to try to stream some live content whenever possible. As well, and all of that content will be posted at twitter.com/podnuts, whether it's the live broadcast or the posted broadcast to this show.
There you go. Sounds good. All right. So, yeah, please check it out. And do you remember? I can't remember. Oh, this is terrible. I mean, I should have had it written down. But congratulations. I'll just say congratulations to our winner of the Ubuntu phone. It is shipping today. Today or early tomorrow from the post office. I dropped it off. And he will have it soon. Congratulations. And by the way, for those of you who don't remember, this person won the Ubuntu phone, the Nexus 4 with Ubuntu Touch installed, simply by being a member of the Linux for the Rest of Us Club, which you can also join for absolutely free by going to podnuts.com/Linux for the Rest of Us Club. Signing up there, you'll be given some, eventually we're working on some special content just for those in the club, but you are automatically entered as a member of the club to any giveaway that we do here on this show just by being a member. And if you win, we'll contact you, ask you for your address. We ship you the item, you win. So, we're going to try to get some a response from the winner once he gets his phone. It'd be cool if he could do like a little interview of it, maybe send it back that we could upload. That'd be fun. I'm not going to put any pressure on him, but still, he won it just by being a member of the club. Please check it out. Like I said, it's absolutely free, and we give you updates and enter you into win prizes throughout the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say, starting next show, we're going to be giving away some Beagle Bone Blacks. I am going to send out an email to the entire club asking if they wanted to be opt-in to this contest giveaway, because I'm going to guess not everyone out there wants a Beagle Bone, so I do not want to give it away to someone who does not want it.
Right. Yep, we might as well be giving it out to people who would rather use it. Because I know that, I mean, if I had one, I'd totally use it. But I would rather not, especially something like that, because that is more of a, it's more of like a homework gift. You know, like the comedian Jim Gaffigan would say, you know, you give some people a book and they're like, oh, yeah, it's a gift. They're like, oh, great, I got to read this book. If you give someone a Beagle Bone, if they're not used to playing with single board computers, they might think, oh, great, now I got to go learn this or something. But yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I will tell people, do not forget, even though other hardware manufacturers are not really hardware manufacturers, neither is this one, but throw out the announcement of a brand new Intel NUC Ream branded. They're not the first. They're actually now, I want to say, now that I stop thinking about it, they're almost like the fourth or fifth vendor to do this. But one of the ones who did it earlier was Think Penguin. If you go to thinkpenguin.com, you can browse open source Linux friendly hardware, not just Ubuntu friendly hardware, and you can do what you can to support smaller companies, and if you do find something that you like, do not hesitate, send us an email, podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com, and I can send you a coupon code. The only thing I ask is that if you do not use that coupon code, please let me know so I can give it to someone else who will use it.
Yeah, because we only have a few of those on hand at a time. We'd rather that people use them as intended. And you know, if you get one, like Dor said, for whatever reason, either you decided against it or something happens and you don't have the funds available, no sweat. Just let us know. We'll reissue the code to somebody else. But please do check out thinkpenguin.com. Not just laptops and desktops. They also have some of the smaller kind of Intel NUC type machines. They have all sorts of preloaded USBs with distros on them, keyboards, all sorts of stuff. So if you've never been there before, check them out. Great to support people who are supporting the community and giving back to the community based on the sales that they're generating by selling these products, by helping people out. So it's really, really a good cause. So check them out, thinkpenguin.com.
Right, and here is the OSs listed, at least on the Wii computer, the Intel NUC Ream branded. It's not one distro, but it's Triskel, Parabola, Ubuntu, Kubuntu, Lubuntu, Linux Mint, Peppermint Linux, Fedora 20 and 21, OpenSUSE 13.1, 13.2, Magia 4, Zorin OS, CentOS, Scientific Linux, and Red Hat Linux. And I'm sure if you ask for any other Ubuntu-based distribution, they will have no real problem doing it as long as that distribution has been updated since 1204. So you do not have to worry about getting locked into only one distribution when you go with ThinkPenguin. They give you much more choice than most other vendors out there. So I really do appreciate that.
I agree. Very, very good. All right. Well, let's dive right into it. So, Dor, you have been experimenting a bit with some different distros as normal. Can you speak about the one that you've sort of landed on and, dare I say, fell in love with recently?
Well, first off, I want to give you a quick history. And the quick history is, since around 1204, I've been a stickler for sticking with distros based on Ubuntu, and the one I found back then that I really liked was Hybride, Hybride, which is a French based distribution that really changes the default desktop drastically, but then gives you the unique ability to come at least compared to most distributions, to actively switch your desktop interface without logging in and without logging out. So it's basically a seamless transition when you want to switch from GNOME to KDE to Mate to Cinnamon to Xbox to Flux. And with your normal distro, you have to log completely out, close all applications, change your session status, and then log back in. Well, with HiWrite, it was very easy. I used that for the longest time, the 1204 distribution version, which had technically a Compiz desktop, which was super, super light. And then they switched it a lot when they went to 1404, and I kind of fell out of grace. So then I was using Ubuntu and GNOME Ubuntu for a while. But then I found another distribution, and what I'm kind of shocked is it's another French-based distribution. It's called Voyager Linux. Now, I didn't find this, quote-unquote. I've heard about it on and off for years from primarily Jeff Owens was the main guy I know who has used this distribution in the past. And I remember him speaking very highly about it, but he never went into much detail. He just said, oh, it's really clean, it's really fast, it's really smooth. But he didn't say much more else about it. Now, I will say there is multiple versions of this distribution, which it doesn't help the confusion, because when you go to the website, first thing that has to happen is has to translate it from French. Okay, now after that, the main versions that I know of that they have on their website is Live Voyager 1204 1310, Live Voyager 7 based off Debian Wheezy, Live Voyager 8 based off of Debian Jesse. Then there's Live HD Voyager, Live Voyager 1404, Live Voyager 140403, which is just a red version, and then there's Live Voyager X. Wow, not confusing at all. I went with Live Voyager X, and I went with Live Voyager X because it has a seamless integration with XBMC. And I keep telling myself I need to give that a fair shake. I've been using Plex for, I don't want to say far too long, but I've been a exclusive Plex guy for a very long time. So I need to give Voyager a try. If you're watching the video now, what you can see is I have a quick RDP or VNC session into my desktop. I've done just a touch of customizations, but you have Mint style main menus. You have Unity style launchers built into it. You even have built into the distribution, dare I say, Kupfer style launchers as well. And that's just the launchers. You have your plank bar off to the side, a very pretty interface to launch applications. And over on the side here is where you got your special XFCE panel, where basically just one click and you have yourself Kodi up and running without any extra special tweaks whatsoever. I would like to do a little video on Voyager, hopefully later, showcasing some of the things about it. I will just put it like this. This is the most heavily polished, user-friendly, full-featured XFCE distribution I think I've ever seen, period. These French guys, dare I say, make good stuff.
And what's funny about the genesis of all this is that this was almost 3 years ago. Jeff Owens installed Voyager Linux because he, for whatever reason, thought that I was running it and got the impression that I installed it and really liked it.
Yeah, there was two we talked about back to back, and I can't remember what the other one was. But at that time, we mentioned both of them, and then you said, yeah, I like it a lot, and you were going on about it. The one.
Right.
And he thought the other.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, he boxed me one day for some tech support on it. And I was like, dude, I've never installed that. He's like, what? Are you serious? I've been using it for 2 weeks thinking that you installed it. I was like, no. But yeah, even back then, very, very good options, very, very slick. And I'm glad to hear. And honestly, I'm thinking about installing it just based on what you've been telling me, because seamless integration with Kodi, aka XBMC. That and the customized launchers that have somewhat like a Kupfer capabilities, and just the fact that it's XFCE, it shouldn't be too heavy to where it couldn't run on most systems. It sounds really good.
Oh, no, no. It's silly full light. And just real quick, off on the right side, it has like a heartbeat icon. If you click that, you get some detailed information about it. One of it is your activity menu, which it's only using even when I go crazy, about a gig's worth of RAM on the desktop.
Wow.
But like one of the stupid things that this has built in, with basically two quick clicks, you can see in detail the complete hardware layout of your system and what drivers are loaded. You can see the exact model of a processor, RAM, the model of the hard drive, network information, audio. But that literally is not even close to the tip of the iceberg when it comes to information that this desktop tries to surface to you, dare I say. Yeah, unbelievably smooth is all I got to say.
Hmm. Very, very cool. How long have you been running it now?
5 days, maybe 6 days.
Okay. Okay. Cool. 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 Well, please, keep touching base with us. Let us know, maybe give us, you already gave us kind of your first impressions. Maybe we can give it 30, 60 days. You can kind of do a more comprehensive review. You were saying how you might be interested in doing a video on it. That would give us some more information. But overall, definitely dipped your toe in. You like it so far.
Right. And I'll just say, I literally get a extremely giddy feeling when this happens. Like we mentioned something, Jeff Owens mishears us, and 2 years later it surfaces back to us kind of thing. But I've seen this a lot here recently. I've seen many people say, wow, I found this application and this thing is awesome. I'm thinking to myself, yes, me and Cody said the same thing about 2 years ago when we brought it on Linux for the Linux for the rest of us episode, 40 or whatever. The example I'm going to use is NitroShare. NitroShare is an application we brought extremely more than a year ago. This little stub application you install on all your computers on your network, then it lets you easily, quote unquote, copy files over your network without having to be a network admin. But literally, almost 2 years ago is when we brought it. But people, I've seen at least three postings in the last 2 weeks where people say, wow, this is awesome. So I just think it's kind of funny. Not funny, haha, I guess.
I completely forgot about this, and I'm reading it now. And yeah, this is an awesome application. This would be great for so many different things. But my initial reaction to it, I'll just read the synopsis. Okay, NitroShare, a network file sharing application that makes sending a file to another machine on the local network as easy as dragging and dropping. So for instance, if you had three machines, three monitors on a desktop, okay, and yet one of the machines was hooked up to some external hard drives for automatic backup, let's say through like redo backup or back in time. You could have, create a document, drop it in this folder, have it automatically saved to the folder on machine, machine C that's hooked up to those external drives. Come time for the automatic backup, it backs them up. This is pretty neat. I dig this.
Right. And I'll say one of the other pluses to the application is you can set it to where every time you push a file, you can wait to get the okay from the other side. So it you can set it to where it will just not blindly accept everything that's given to it, or you can just set it to just be an open shelf that you can load from a different computer. The options it gave were really nice. And basically, this is using the iTunes technology of network discovery that I cannot remember what it's called, and it's technically open sourced. I can't remember. It's a really nice application where if you don't have yourself a home server and you want to get files all over your network.
Very good. Very good.
Right. Now, what I wanted to bring next was one of those things. It was a very quiet update in my browser. And, I'm sitting there just doing. And then all of a sudden I realized, and I literally started getting upset. I took offense. What in the hell is this icon up here? Who put this icon on? And I literally felt myself starting to get upset, like almost violently upset. Who put it? And I'm thinking to myself, did I get, and then I stop and think, wait, did I get an infection? This is fantastic. You know, then, and I start playing with it and I put my mouse over it and it's just called hello. I'm like, this sounds just like a virus. This is great. And then I click it and then I figure out, no, it's not. This is a Mozilla application. Now, we have talked for at least a year on this podcast about WebRTC. WebRTC is like saying P2P. It's like saying HTTPS. It's a protocol. It's something applications can use over a network. WebRTC allows for live streaming of video and audio. And when you do it right, you can also transmit basically like live file systems across the network, like file browsers kind of thing. It's a very interactive, dynamic, Ajax-y thing. Okay. WebRTC utilized right with a correctly coded interface right is a complete replacement for Google Hangouts or for Skype. Period. Period. That's it. It is. It works great. It uses multiple open codecs where it can use like Opus and it can use Speaks and it can do very clean audio over the network. Unlike Skype, which is now probably using like a 10-year-old codec that they just keep iterating and iterating and iterating. Google Hangouts audio has gotten a lot better, but every time I use WebRTC, the audio quality is second to none. The bad thing about this Firefox Hello is it can only be between two nodes. So if I wanted to talk to Cody or talk to Jonathan Adu or talk to my wife or talk to somebody else, I could, but nobody else can join that conversation. So that's the limitation to it. And it's literally as simple as clicking the icon and you send somebody a URL link. They send the link, it instantaneously just opens right up. No work, no effort, and voila, you have yourself a live video stream over the internet.
So it's just one user to one user then? We can't do like a group chat? Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, maybe you will soon, but not right now. Right now it's just point to point. It's just two points having a conversation. You can disable, enable video, disable, enable audio. If you're really good at your PAVU control or other Linux subsystems, you can actually redirect where audio is coming from very easily, or where audio is going very easily. So it should be a good thing. Now, here's the best thing about WebRTC. You're not reliant on a third-party web server. You own the feed. When I connect with Cody with this, it's literally a point-to-point me to Cody. There's no servers involved. There's no worrying about load on some other place. It's just me to him. So it's a pretty stable connection in my experience.
Yeah, it looks neat. I have yet to actually try it. Have you had the opportunity to try it with anyone yet, Dor?
I tried it with myself.
Let's stop that story right there. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'll say, this is the kind of thing, it's literally been coming for months and months and months. Sorry about that too, Katie. It's only going to get better. It's only going to get more solid. It's only going to become more popular as time goes on. It is going to take a while for this to actually catch on, for other people to know about. But trust me, Firefox, it's lost a lot of market share here recently, I know. But this is the kind of thing that I really do believe can help it come back a little bit.
Yeah, you have people that previously were trying to migrate off of, you know, Microsoft platforms, saying, "Oh, it's just a big company. They're mining my data. They have too much of a stranglehold on me." And then some of those people migrated to Apple, you know, and then same thing. They want to get away, and then, you know, they sort of get looped into the Google ecosystem, and now people are going to migrate from Google to somewhere else. And if you look at, I don't want to say the stranglehold, but some of the services that Google offers, Gmail, you know, Google Music included, Hangouts, they're very enticing. But for someone who wants to use Hangouts and who obviously doesn't want to use Skype for various reasons and who doesn't want to use Hangouts, this is another great web chat option for them, which is absolutely free, which they just use in browser as long as they have, I believe, I know the current version, which I believe is 34.0.06, at least for Linux. But if the current version of Firefox should work just fine, you'll see a little icon which looks
like a chat bubble.
Yeah, it's a chat bubble with a smiley face in it. And click on that, and I actually don't know how it works yet. I haven't tried it, but I'm gonna offer my... I shouldn't say that.
Well, no, that's the thing. You don't have to know how it works. You literally click the button, and all of a sudden, it's going to ask you, can I use your mic? And if you say yes or no, doesn't matter, a little window is going to pop up, and there's going to be two little blue buttons in it, and it's going to be send email and or copy link. Then you just either click email, and then your default email client opens up within the body already having that URL, or you just hit copy URL, then your clipboard has URL, then you go someplace and paste. The other person, as long as they're using Firefox and clicks, it's going to work. I think it might be Firefox 35. That might be the quote-unquote version you have to have in order to get this to work.
Okay, maybe I was thinking 36.0.04. Anyhow, and regardless of this, if you're not running the current version of whatever browser you're using, stop. Do the updates. There's a reason why they're updating it, and most of them are either for security reasons or for functionality and new features such as this. So definitely keep up on that.
Absolutely.
Very cool. All right. So what else do we have in the dock here?
Okay. I saw this, and I'm not going to lie, Cody. I literally had a panic attack on Google Plus. I'm thinking it's probably just link bait. Stop getting excited. It's just link bait. Don't get excited. The label of the article was Super Mario 64 Remake comes to Linux, Mac, and Windows PC thanks to Unity.
Okay. Super what?
Okay. Super Mario 64.
Super what?
Exactly. Super Mario.
I thought it was Super Mario.
No, not. What part of the world do you live in? This is America, son.
I live in the world where I listen to him say his own name, and he doesn't say Mario. He says Mario.
Yes, because he's Italian, but we live in America, so it's Mario. And it was a little bit of a clickbaity thing, because it's not Super Mario 64 Remake. It's the remake of the first level in the castle, and it's basically only a one-stage, it's a one-trick pony. But. So there's no walking around the castle, there's no talking to Toad, there's no... And no, you just hit start, and it's like you're landing in the first level. And I will say, unbelievably smooth experience. I literally have a Nintendo 64 USB gamepad. I plug that into my computer. When you launch the file, first thing it does is it asks you, do you want to use your keyboard or map a controller? Well, map a controller. And it just said up, up, left, left, down, down, right, right, jump, this. Camera, 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 duck, and hit go. And it worked exactly like I remember Super Mario 64 working on the N64. I was blown away.
And I will say that, well, it's also not officially supported by Nintendo. That's beside the point, obviously. But anyway, that aside, I would say that as a game development platform, and I use that loosely, Unity tends to get a lot of flack.
Yeah,
as kind of being the Fisher Price, dare I say, the Fisher Price game development kit, because a lot of stuff is done for you. It's shiny. It's easy. It's neat. But it at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what tools you're using, as long as the output and the result of that work is good, and you can still do good work within the environment. And it's cool to see these developers use Unity for interesting things. Like, for instance, I am positive. Have you heard of the game Pillars of Eternity?
Yes.
If you like old school dungeon crawlers like Diablo, Neverwinter Nights, that type of stuff, you'll love this game. Check it out on Steam. That was built with Unity. It looks beautiful, and I think that is one of the more better examples of Unity being used as a development platform for these games. Now, to see someone get a hold of it and do something like this, this is going to open the floodgates. This is going to get more people to buy this kit and say, I wonder what I can do with it. Because what it comes down to is when you have a toolbox, the only limitation is your imagination.
Testify.
Yep. And just seeing this, even though it's only, even as you said, kind of a limited experience within Mario 64, they still recreated parts of Mario 64, and we could play it out. If we could play it on Linux, I mean, shake it however you want. That's still cool. Period.
Right. Yeah. It's. I'll say this. I think it's one of those things. I don't want to say. I really don't want to insult Unity because I know nothing about Unity. But given the tools they were given, I think they pulled it off really good. Certain things are changed. Like number one. You cannot jump inside a cannon and shoot yourself. Instead, the cannons just shoot bubbles or water up in the air. And then at other places in the stage, they come down. And in the first stage of that game, there was places where water droplets would fall from the sky. And if it hit you, it hurt. The other thing is the bomb-bombs don't have any faces. At least the gigantic one attached to the chain doesn't exist. Little things like that are changed. On the very top of the mountain where you would end the race and where you would fight the big bomb, there's basically like a, I don't want to say trampoline. You jump on something and it launches you back off. So there are definitely things different in this than there is with real Super Mario, but I am very okay with that. This is like an early build, I'll say. And this is completely cross-platform, Windows, Mac, and Linux. That, I think, says something.
Definitely. Yeah, it's not just for Linux. You can also play it on Windows.
Right.
Very, very neat.
Right, now, we've already brought up two things that are completely cross-platform. Firefox Hello, doesn't matter what OS you're on. Super Mario 64, doesn't matter what you're on, as long as you don't work for Nintendo and get fired for trying this, and you're okay. But here's one more, and it's called Vivaldi, which is a name we've heard of in the Linuxverse a whole bunch. And I just reloaded the page on purpose because I think it's really pretty how it launches. Okay. This is not a tablet. Correction. This is not a tablet that says it's going to launch and doesn't launch. Okay. This is not any piece of hardware. This is a browser. This is a browser based upon Chromium. And what its goal is, it's trying to be more of a power user browser is what I'm going to say. I've been using this also for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. You can download the tech preview. There are certain features that are not enabled in it whatsoever. Like in the left-hand bar, there's a little thin bar on the left-hand side where you can have your email client. You can have a notes syncing client to sync notes across and a couple of things like that. It's also where you can access your download manager. I will say this is a very clean-looking, non-cluttered browser. I think these guys are onto something doing, I would say, pretty good. So it's just a question of can they fully deliver on this idea. With their tech preview so far, I think it's really nice.
It looks interesting. I couldn't get the link to load, and I'm finally able to navigate to the website and check it out. What's the catch? Like, what's the mission statement? Like, why would I as a user care about this browser? What kind of unique features and or mission do they have that would make me want to either jump ship from my current browser or at least make me say to myself, you know what? That's cool. I want to go to try.
Well, I'll say if you're already a Chrome user, the jump is not as painful because it's based on Chromium and the Chrome Store web apps that I've used seem to load and seem to work just fine. So the plus to it is if you're already using Chrome, it's not a hard transition. Their goal is to try to bring, okay, we already live in the browser. That's one thing everyone has to admit. If you don't live in the browser, then you're not the quote unquote normal user of today. Most people live in the browser, whether it be social media, whether it be web-based email, whether it be online collaboration tools. This attempts to bring more things into the browser, like email, like notes, sync your bookmarks across devices, have a contacts list built in, so it'd be very easy to, like, quote-unquote, share pages or web snippets with other people in your contacts list. And just, I would say, clean up the interface a little bit. It is a very square edge, non-rounded corner interface. One of the stupidest things that I actually like is that some of the Chrome, quote-unquote, around the browser changes color depending on what page you're on. So if you're on Google, it's mainly blue. So the border will change to blue. If you go to Reddit, it will change light blue. If you go to, just insert name of site here, and it's going to slightly change the color of all the border. So it's definitely, a different looking browser, but it also functions a little bit better. Like its home screen, the default home screen, the speed dial type screen. I think they do that really nice. Again, gorgeous looking, really good looking, really clean looking. Works really fast. Have never had a freeze, a lockup, anything on the thing. It just freaking works smooth. I'm liking this. I will say that. I've been using Chrome for ever since I basically got a Chromebook. Chrome has been my primary browser, so it's not really much of a shift for me to start using this.
Huh. And let's see. So Vivaldi.com. Vivaldi.com. Definitely check them out. I'll install it and give it a try. Sounds interesting. And I'm looking at the website, looking at the team that's assembled, kind of some of the messages they have on there. And I like seeing like-minded people coming together and creating a product like this. I don't know if necessarily fills a need, but I'm always an advocate of trying an alternative to your normal tools. For instance, for the longest time, I was just using the stock browser on Android, which was just internet browser. And then shortly thereafter, Chrome became kind of the default. But recently, I've been using Dolphin, which Doors used in the past. They even had the developer of Dolphin on Android App Addict. And I got to say that has become a much more mature browser on mobile. And I like it a lot. And if you're never going to know exactly what features you're looking for in a browser until you kind of dip your toe in to a number of different ones and just see what they offer and what you do or don't like. So definitely, yes. I would give Vivaldi a try.
Right, and I'll say here's the good thing about it, and I agree with Cody, unbelievably spot on. You don't know what you got till it's gone, nor do you appreciate what others have until you see it. There's no way, and I understand settling. Everyone settles once in a while, and I used Chrome the last time for like 3 years, didn't even look at Firefox. Now on every computer, I try to keep at least two browsers installed and literally actively switch back and forth between them at least once or twice a week. So trying things is always fun. Okay. This next link I have to bring up because there's this guy, named Seth who does really good stuff. This is over at, opensource.com. Opensource.com is a very friendly, and I'm going to say, honest on a lot of different levels about open source technologies. Not everything they post is about how open source is so fantastic. What's wrong with you, you idiot? Kind of attitude. A lot of it comes from a very unbiased attitude, I'll say. Very, very honest about how technology works, when something works good, how something works good, why something works good, and then why it doesn't. But this was one of the ones immediately just gravitated right towards. Then I saw it was by this guy named Seth, who really posts some fan-freaking-tastic content. And in totally unrelated news, if you go to GNU World Order, there's a guy there posting really good content too as well. But this is a KDN Live posting. Very well-verbed and explained on how to do split screens with KDN Live, not to mention exquisitely documented the process with good screenshots that when need to be are very zoomed in on what you need to worry about and when needed to zoom back out to give you the big picture. This is one of those things that when I looked at this, glanced at the whole process, I thought to myself, this guy makes this kind of thing seem too easy. I would be terrified to know how much time Seth has spent in video editors in the last 10 years.
Right.
Because there's little doubt in my mind, if there is such a thing as a multimedia solutions expert or multimedia solutions architect or media solutions provider, he is it. He is the epitome of it. He is what we're, if you want to be that, base all your knowledge off of what he knows, because it's obviously the right thing to know kind of thing. And his delivery, I honestly think, is literally second to none. This was a great article. I had to bookmark and keep in my stream. And I'm really mentioning it on the show for a very selfish reason. It's so in 1 year or 2 years when I say to myself, you know, somebody did a thing on split screening in KDN Live, and I really need to know how to do that now. Oh, yeah. Google.com, site, colon, podnuts.com, space, split screen, KDN Live, enter, and voila, the notes are going to surface, and I'll be able to go do it.
That's it. This is all selfish endeavor. He's just trying to gain a database of links in order to serve his future purposes. But what I will say is that as a video editing platform, as a non-linear editing video platform, KDN Live is really, really solid. They have continued development, made some great strides within what they offer to the end user. And as a user of several of these over the years on multiple different operating systems, it stacks up and it's stable. And to see someone like Seth Kenlan, for those of you who didn't know his last name, if Dor didn't mention it.
No, I'm just blind.
That's okay. Post this among many other different neat things you can do with it. Kudos to him, because when it comes to video editors and even audio editors, what I've always told people is get what you can, but if you can get something that may seem a little bit more advanced than what you need to use, get that anyway, because you know just as well as I do, and many people can relate to this as well, when you're looking at getting a piece of software for task, whatever it is, for instance, let's just take it as an example, Microsoft Word. Most people don't use 97% of the options on Microsoft Word. They just need to create a text file, export it to PDF, and send it off, or export it to, you know, .doc or .docx, and that's it. That's all they need to do. Same thing with video editors. You can get a video editor with, you know, all the bells and whistles, and you just need to simply line clips up, do a fade in, fade out, maybe add some music on in a music track. That's it. As long as it's easy to not only configure but to use to your specific needs, you don't need to use all the tools in the tool shed. You can just grab the hammer and the wrench and go to town. So get something like this. I've seen some of the lower end video editors, speaking of just video editors in particular, and they are frustrating. Especially
very low end.
Especially the video editors that come on the disc from the company that you bought your camera from. That just makes me want to scream into the void. It makes me so angry, because then you get locked into that video format that you've recorded on the camera. I could go on about that for hours, but KDN Live, give it a try. And if you want some tutorials or some ideas on how to use it or how to do specific things with it, check out Seth Kenlan, because he seems to have quite a bit of content on that specific matter.
Yeah. And I'll put it like this. When I was young, literally, I was the guy who didn't talk a lot. My excuse was because I had a really bad speech impediment. But in reality, I literally wanted to learn as much as possible. And one of the things I remember learning maybe at the age of like 9 or so, 10, was if I want to get any better at basketball, I cannot play somebody who's worse than me. I'm never going to get better, ever. If I can find someone just better than me to play, because then it forces me to just play a little bit better. Same thing with the video editor. If you've never used a video before, I highly encourage you use something like PITIVI or Windows Movie Maker, just so you can say, oh, okay, now I've used one. Now what's better? And then this is going to be one of the ones. It's not super difficult to grasp, but how far this one can take you, I think, is pretty far into the process. I'm sure there's many of them out there that are much better than this editor, but to me, this is the one that has a good balance of flexibility, easiness of use, but powerful of what you can get out of it. The only thing I will say that is the only hang up with it depends what distribution, what spin you install it on will directly affect what you can output to. So what I encourage you is if you're looking for this one very specific output, whether it be MM or H.264 at 1080p, first load it on a live version of whatever OS you're on. See if it has that support. Because if it doesn't have that support, that in to me, for the newer guy, that's one of the hardest things to figure out, how to add to a distribution.
Very good point. Very good point. Yeah, it's nice and fully featured. It's definitely not the highest of high end, because then you get into
Lightworks.
Yeah. Well, when you talk about high end video editors, I mean, you're talking about almost a full audio editor inside of it, and all sorts of color correction. I mean, color correction down to the minutia of color correction. That, and obviously, much like Tor mentioned, all sorts of different recording inputs and outputs, depending on what kind of device you're using. But really, when it comes down to it, for even small independent projects or home movies, you literally just need to do simple transitions, cuts, maybe a fade in, fade out of some audio. That's it. But much like, yeah, I totally agree with you, Dor. Use something that's going to test your ability and that's going to make you better, make you curious. Because once you have something like that, you're not complacent. You're not just sitting there running through the motions in a certain piece of software or a certain, you know, tool set. You're actively getting better because you're trying the different options in front of you.
Right. Yeah, and really quick, there's one more link from opensource.com I really had to, quote-unquote, bring up. Okay, Audacity is one of those tools. If you do anything with an audio file, Audacity can help you within that process. It's almost a given. It's going to be able to help you in one shape, way, or form. Whether you option to use it or not is up to you. But I will say, learning how to use Audacity, to me, was honestly more painful than learning how to use KDN Live. And it's because everything you need to use is in this one list. And in this one list, not always do the names make exact sense to what you expect them to do. And in this one list, when you get 20 or 30 down, then they start bunching like 20 in subgroups. So in this one menu, there's literally like 250 choices of things you can do to affect the audio. So Audacity is a little bit of a burden to really get and understand. But there's another article here at opensource.com, this one by Scott Nesbitt, which sounds like a monkey's character from the old TV show, talking about how to clean up digital recordings. He might as well said, hey, podcasters, here's a good way to clean out the crap that you've been publishing here for a while, kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. This is so essential to any kind of audio recording. And the fact that it's available in a piece of 100% free software is amazing. Because if you thought about this 10, 15 years ago, it would be a specialized piece of software just for noise removal. You know what I mean? Or it would be a plugin in Pro Tools you'd have to purchase separately. The fact that it's available for absolutely free is great, because I urge everyone to podcast based on whatever you're interested in. So too many people, I would say too many people in life, not just, I mean, yeah, I would say life in general, not just in relation to what they want to do, but they're held back by limitations. They think, oh, I don't have the equipment. I don't have the know-how when it comes to the software, etc. And specifically when it comes to podcasting. That doesn't necessarily matter in the beginning. What matters is that you get comfortable talking, relaying your opinions, what kind of show it is, talking about content, creating content. And I would urge anybody to go out there and just start recording a show, because if you look at more of the successful shows, even dating back to the early days of this network, you know, Steve didn't have the best equipment when he started out. He just had a passion for talking about computer repair. And then his curiosity grew. He got better equipment, better at handling the software that he was using to edit the shows, etc. Another great example of this is MKBHD. If you look at some of his early, like his first YouTube reviews of hardware, it is painful to watch. And I'm sure that even as himself, he can look back at that and just go, oh my God, what was I doing? But the reality is, what he was doing is he was putting himself out there and he was getting better and he was learning. And too many people sit on the sidelines and wonder, what if I got in there and did it? Or I really should do that, but I don't know. No. Cut all that out. Just do it. If you have to have a handheld recorder, get out there and record. But the fact that you could use a cheap mic or a handheld digital recorder that costs you $15 at a dying, sinking ship of a Radio Shack or a Best Buy, wherever you buy it, and then you could use this free software to clean up the audio to where it would be of much higher quality than when you actually recorded natively on the device is amazing to me in the year that we live in. You know what I mean? Does that make sense to work? I mean, the fact that, you know, we have these tools. There really is no excuse for not creating content nowadays because you have so many great tools in front of you to make it, I wouldn't say the highest quality, but at least really, really good quality for absolutely no dollars whatsoever.
Well, the barrier of entry is definitely came down. Where before, to do it, you would literally have to spend like $600 on a camera, you know, a couple other $100 on some kind of mic. And then you would have to spend $2,000 on a computer and then another $1,000+ on software to do this kind of thing. Where now you need your mobile phone and some free software and YouTube.
Right.
And you're done. Yeah, they've definitely lowered the barrier of entry a whole lot. And I will say another quickie on Audacity is Audacity 2.1.0 just got released. This is actually what I'm thinking, reading, knowing it's a little bit of a big release. There's definitely some changes that happened. And if you've never heard of the podcast, the Audacity to Podcast, I really apologize for not mentioning it sooner. A is a really nice guy by the name of Daniel J. Lewis. Secondly, really, really, really smart. To say this guy is an audiophile is to basically insult him. He's beyond audiophile. This guy understands and knows a lot, and from what I can tell, about audio in general, but also he knows a lot about tools to use for podcasting or for audio recording, whether it be band type things or performance or spoken word. He gives a great rundown of what's new in Audacity 2.1.0 over on his Audacity to Podcast episode 216. So if you really want to hear, dare I say, a professional talk about it, you need to go check it out. He even gives you samples of noise reduction before and after, showing you how much better it's gotten here recently. This is the kind of attention to detail that I'm really impressed by. Daniel has a lot of audacity to document as well.
You see, that's very nice too, is being able to listen to the before and after. Because when it comes to cleaning up audio, that's what you're wondering. You're like, well, unless you're doing it right, you may not have set aside a copy of that original audio to then compare. But if you can compare it beforehand, because depending on the length of the clip, sometimes, you know, this conversion can take a bit. But being able to listen to it ahead of time and see what kind of results someone else is getting with this piece of software that you want to use, absolute gold.
Right. And there's lots of things in Audacity where you would 2 years ago have to click a region, click, 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 and then literally wait 5 to 10 minutes for the thing to finish before you know what was going to happen. Now, for a fair number of the effects you can do, you basically click, click, select a region, click, then you can hit live preview, and literally in like a second or two, you can at least hear what it's going to sound like if you apply this effect. That can help with speeding up your production also a great deal.
Yes, I agree. Very good. Okay, let's see what else we have. That was our last link for the week, really. Definitely very good, especially the... I haven't... You know what? I don't visit opensource.com nearly enough as I should. And those were two fantastic links. If you guys aren't already checking them out, please do. And like I said before, if you're thinking about starting a show, or if you just want to start talking about a topic that may eventually turn into a podcast, check out these two links. They're available in the show notes at our website, podus.com. We'll have a link to it on the main page once the show goes live. Check these out. 100% free software. And much like Dor said, you know, you don't need a high-end hardware. You don't need a high-end mic. To be honest, Dor and I aren't using the best mics on the market. We're just using, a pretty moderate hardware to record this show, and we have been since day one. Sure, we've built on here and there, with funds, from help with the community to get little pieces here and there, but we're not running, $300 to $600 microphones. I think my microphone is maybe $99. Dor's is cheaper than that.
Mine is literally $35. And I will say, yeah, audio hardware is exactly like processors used to be back in what people remember the days, which is still common today, which is you pay a certain amount and then you hit this hard ceiling of you have to pay a lot more to get a little bit of a benefit.
Right.
If me and Cody upgrade our mics, yes, it's going to sound better, but versus how much it's going to cost versus how much better it's going to sound, it's hard to justify that kind of money right now. Even if we had the money, we don't know if we could justify it, because to be honest, I think we sound pretty good.
Yeah, there's a microphone. I'm a big audio geek, and there's a microphone that I've wanted for years. It's the Shure SM7B. It's $350. And I would, I've been in the store, like cash in hand, thinking, I'm just going to do it. And I haven't done it for the exact reason that he has said. If I implemented it in my current setup today, my audio might be, I shouldn't say might be, it definitely would be better, but would it be $350 worth of my hard earned money better in compared to what I've already spent on equipment? I can't say for sure. And that's the reason why I haven't pulled the trigger. The fact that, I run for those of you who don't know anything about my microphones, I run the Shure SM58. Standard pretty much across the industry is vocal mic, performance mic, great. $99 pretty much anywhere you go. And it works great. And I almost like the fact that I'm using this microphone, because I can say, the quality of audio that I'm putting out is done with a mic sub $100, which if you're serious enough in this endeavor or this hobby, however you're tackling it, however you're approaching podcasting, it is within reach of almost anybody. And even if you can't afford that much, for less than half that much, you can get something like what Dor is using or what many other podcasters in our industry use. So don't let I will say this. I have more often than not thrown money into a hobby thinking I need to get this and this and this before I can even consider myself a quote-unquote contender in whatever arena it is. And then I end up spending that money getting into this hobby or whatever it is, and then not really getting into it, not continuing with it. Podcasting, from a standpoint of getting the equipment now, is so easy, but you need to bring the heart, you need to bring the passion, you need to bring the content, and you're never going to be able to bring the content and learn what to talk about until you start with the tools that you have, based on what's in front of you, what's free, or what you can afford. So if you can do that, and I know you can, just do it, because many people listening to this right now may be thinking, oh, I've been kind of kicking this idea around. I don't know what I should do. Is there an audience for it? It doesn't matter. Just do it. Put it out there. See what happens. You'll be amazed.
Yeah, and I'll say the thing about Cody's mic is if you find some friends that also need a mic, you can typically find 3 packs of that microphone for only about $100, $120. So it's another reason to go to conferences, join communities, and find other people with a similar interest.
Very good point, Dor. All right. Well, we are about to wrap up the end of the show here. Dor, I cannot tell you how excited I am for Linux Fest Northwest. I know you're excited too, but in your own way, you're trying to be reserved.
I'm trying to be reserved. I don't overstress about anything, either positively or negatively. I don't worry about work tomorrow because I don't care. It's tomorrow.
Stress.
No. Everything takes up brain cycles, whether good, bad, or indifferent. And it's too far away.
No.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's less than a month. That's nowhere near two. I get what you're saying, but I'm still saying no. You should be excited because it's happening and it's going to be great.
I think you're overusing the word excited.
I'll be excited enough for the both of us. I will take that burden. How about that? I'll take that off your shoulders and more. Yes. I can literally say, go ahead.
And I'll say also Martin Obando is very much looking forward to this event, but everyone out there, if you can, if you pray, stop and say a prayer for Martin's toe.
Yes. Martin Rambo Obando, all 9'8" of him, 475 pounds. He has broken his little toe, I believe on his left foot. Is that correct, Dor?
I don't know, but it's worse than that. He thought it was broke, and when his wife touched the toe, he said it, quote-unquote, cracked, and, oh yeah, it's definitely broke. Oh, that does not seem like a good day.
Well, anyway, yeah, he, for those of you who don't know Martin Rambo Obando, he walks around with a knife in his teeth and he puts Paul Bunyan to shame. But he is currently hindered by a broken toe. Pray to whatever deity you believe to if you would like him to recover. And for those of you who don't know him, he does the dirty work of this show. He collects all this, all the show notes, posts them on the website. He also, in addition to running a computer repair business, he hosts Geeksters every week on the Podnext Network, a computer repair roundtable, geeksters.tv, and you can also check it out at podnext.com. Please check it out. They have good roundtable discussions revolving around computer repair, and they have guests on the show, several different sort of revolving co-hosts. Fantastic show. Could not recommend it higher. Check it out.
Well, yeah, geeksters.tv, don't go there. It's dead. Well, that's the old show.
Oops.
But I will say this. Martin Obando does not run a computer repair business. He pones his own computer repair business. That makes sense. I don't know anybody who really maximizes his efficiency in kicking butt. I will say it, his job, and his job is his business. But two, Martin, I vent a lot to Martin because he's a very common sense, rational fella. And once in a while he vents to me. I will say this, part of my sanity, I personally owe to Martin Rambo Bando, one of the best guys I've met online, really nice guy. And I encourage people, if you haven't listened to Geeksters in a while, go check it out again. Trust me when I say this right now, good stuff, good people, good conversations.
Most definitely. Awesome. So to recap, yes, LinuxFestNorthwest.org, very excited. Also very excited about, was it Aaron or Chuck? One of the guys that's traveling with us found, or no, it was you. And it was one of you three dudes. Anyway, there is, Bellingham, Washington has this, it's basically a pub crawl, but you get a punch card if you register for this pub crawl. And I haven't done one yet, so I don't know if this is standards. I'm just excited because I get to drink. Yeah, anyway, for every pint that you drink at these places, you get a punch of this punch card, and then you trade in the card for swag based on supporting this sort of pub crawl. It sounds like it's great to me, and if only I had something like this in my earlier days, I would have a lot more t-shirts and bottle openers and letter openers and maybe pocket knives emblazoned with the logo of said organization based on the amount that I drank before. But just can't wait to get out there and just have fun with the guys. And I'm really looking forward to a lot of the talks at the fest. If you haven't checked it out yet, linuxfestnorthwest.org, check out the accepted talks. There's pretty much anything for everybody there. It's going to be a good time.
Absolutely.
Cool. So, Dor, where can we find you online?
The easiest place to is on Google Plus. Just do a search, all one word, door to door geek, and you can find me. If you want to keep up with just the media that gets published, it's twitter.com/podnuts. If you want to communicate directly with me in a non-social media environment, just go to podnuts.com, click on the contact button. That will send an email to mail@podnuts.com.
Sounds good. Sounds good. If you want to contact me, please send me an email to Cody@podnuts.com. You can follow me on Twitter @CodyCooper or search for Cody Cooper at Google Plus and find me there. Follow me. post all kind of content throughout the week, and we can start some conversations based on pretty much anything. But yeah, please definitely check it out. I love hearing from the fans, from listeners, like having conversations. I would say a lot of the people that I met in this community have been from either me reaching out to them or vice versa. And a lot of good conversation to be had based on that, just interaction based on what I put out there or what they put out there. So yeah, please do that. As always, please go to the acf.tk, support the Accessible Computing Foundation. Our good friend Jonathan Nadeau heads that up, and that organization brings technology to those who would otherwise be left behind, those people with disabilities. Raising money in order to develop software to help the blind, the disabled, several different the dyslexic, several different types of people, in order to help them interface with software and computers on a much, much better basis than they are right now. And you can become a regular contributor to the ACF for as little as $2 a month, less than half of a cup of expensive coffee. And you'll know every time you see when that money comes out of your PayPal account that you know is going toward a good cause. And if you want to also support him in another fashion, please download Sonar Linux. That is his custom GNU Linux distribution, which is implementing a lot of the software that they are developing in order to help people with disabilities. If you know someone that has impaired vision, is a completely blind, dyslexic, has different motor function disabilities, please check it out. The distribution is absolutely free, and it's based on Arch Linux. Excuse me, based off of Manjaro, which itself is based on Arch. So you will be just supporting him by downloading it and potentially rolling up bugs, or just giving him an idea of what kind of experience you were having. It's a fantastic way to contribute to the community, and we appreciate it. Also, once again, I have to thank everybody who is using the podnets.com/Amazon and podnets.com/eBay links. You guys are absolutely rocking it. If you haven't tried using these already, it's very, very simple. You just simply navigate to podnets.com/Amazon if you want to make purchases on Amazon, or podnets.com/eBay if you want to make purchases on eBay, and you're going to see the site as you would normally. However, by using our affiliate link, we are getting a little bit of a kickback for the purchases that you were already making. And that money is going toward funding the costs of the show, among many other things throughout the network, including us procuring items to give away through different shows such as Android App Addicts and our show right here, Linux for the Rest of Us. So thank you very much for your support with that. Like I said, it doesn't cost you a penny more than what you would have already spent on that site anyway. Please check out podnets.com/Amazon and /eBay. We do appreciate your support.
Yeah, and I'll say, you guys who have been using it are the reason, A, we don't have to spend a lot of time on the back end tracking down sponsors. B, we don't have to do promotions in order to be able to afford to go to conferences. C, when we get to conferences, we do not have to worry about giving out swag. We can give out some swag. Why? Because we're giving back to supporting those who support us. But four, you guys make it to where the only sponsorships you've ever heard basically for a while on Podnuts are vendors who've contacted us and that we have basically filtered through. I feel very safe with saying over 30% of the people that have had approached me as the owner of Podnuts have been turned down because we are not going to sponsor them because we do not want to sponsor them. And thanks to you guys going to those affiliate links, we don't have to feel the stress of, well, if we don't take this person's money, how are we going to do X? How are we going to go to B? You know, kind of thing. So you guys are literally enabling us to focus on the content, focus on the community, focus on the conversations, and focusing on delivering a great product, not interrupting every show every 10 to 15 minutes to mention an advertiser. And I really cannot thank people enough. And if you appreciate not hearing the podcast stop, not seeing a website filled with ads, not being constantly reminded to go check out this other link that's not really show topic, then keep going to that website. Keep going to products.com/Amazon. Keep going to products.com/eBay. Because every time you do, you enable us to just worry about the content.
And we thank you for it. We really, really do. It does help us out. All right, everybody. Once again, thank you very much for listening to the show. We hope to see and hear from you soon. If you'd like to send us an email to the show, please send it to podcast@linuxforthestofus.com. And if you want to send in a voicemail, which we haven't received many lately, please send it into 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688, if I'm correct. But send it to 7076-PODNUT. That's the easiest way to do it. I guarantee we will get it that way. And we're looking forward to getting a show soon. We can talk about specifically address your emails and voicemails because we like to hear from the community. We like to hear what you guys are thinking about the show, and we love your feedback. So please give it to us. So thank you very much for listening to another episode. We are well on our way to 200. We are not stopping. Hopefully those of you who have been listening lately understand that we are back on track. We've been very consistent with our episodes. That is not a fluke. We are continuing full speed ahead with this show. We're not pod fading whatsoever. We really do appreciate all of your support. But please remember the most important thing is that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.